Success isn't just about what you achieve. It's about living a life that reflects your values and priorities. Welcome to Engineer Your Success, the podcast that helps you lead with intention and live fulfilled.
I want to welcome you to another episode of the Engineer Your Success podcast. I'm Dr. James Bryant, your host and your guide for winning at work and at home. We've been focusing on interviewing engineering professionals and folks that are doing great work in our industry. And today we have Mr. Kevin Moore with us. Kevin, how are you doing?
Good, James. How are you?
I am doing great. Why don't you introduce yourself so that folks can get to know you a little bit more?
Sure. I've been practicing structural engineering for about 30 years. Just recently took a position where the engineering part is probably way down at the list of things I do, if not non-existent, but practicing in the fact of designing and evaluating, analyzing buildings for that entire time. Went to graduate school in the University of Texas. So left there in about 1995 and have been practicing in the San Francisco Bay Area. That's where I'm living and physically located, but I've done projects all over the world. It's kind of a benefit or an opportunity that I was able to take advantage of and not just do the same thing in the same space. I grew up in the San Francisco Bay Area. So a lot of things that are new and exciting for people that come to visit, I take for granted. I got some very, very good lessons from perspective and what's so great about where I live and it made me appreciate what I was doing and the work that I've done. I just got asked this the other day. People mention it a lot, but I met somebody new and we were talking for about 10 minutes and he interrupted and he says, you know, you're not a normal structural engineer. That's probably one of the most common statements that makes me proud of who I am and what I've been doing is that I'm pretty balanced and diverse and always looking to do something and do something well and outside of what I, you know, known for. So while I say I'm a structural engineer, I'm probably less of a structural engineer than I am other things. Now I'm an executive leader at a company that is worldwide and big, and those things are all help me understand a little bit of who I am and that how that journey got me to where I'm am. And it's not just structural engineering, which is
okay.
Nice.
So there are a lot of different questions that come to mind for me, but I want to keep right along that thread with what you're doing now. You're in more of an executive leadership, people development role. Can you talk about that a little bit more?
I'm the executive vice president for a business unit at Rimkus. We call ourselves Built Environment Solutions. It's essentially classic AEC or architectural engineering construction work where, you know, we would typically look at evaluating buildings, designing new buildings, doing something along the lines of helping building owners or infrastructure owners look at their assets and improve them. And so the technical nature of the work is very familiar to me, although there's lots of opportunity. A lot of the work that we do is uniquely transactional, just the way that the company is kind of developed themselves. My work up to this date technically is not at all transactional. I've done some of it, but completely different and far more traditional. So it gave me a lot more impetus to think about how to grow and how to change. But yeah, now that I'm in that executive vice president role, I'm invited to be on the board meetings with the C-suite. We've got an investor. And so the investor sits on the board, obviously. And that discussion that happens at the board levels is all business. Everything is all about business and metrics and performance and things that I was always interested in when I first started my engineering career. And I thought I need to learn that. I wonder if I should go get an MBA. And I said, I'll just start my own business. And so now here I am, you know, 30 years later from wherever I started. And I am doing all those things that I thought I wanted to.
Even though you're not a traditional structural engineer, you were still doing more traditional engineering work. What made you take that leap?
Yeah, so the evolution of my career had been very much about the project. So, you know, almost assignment based. And that's how all engineers start. You get assigned something and you start working through it. And then there's a recognition of serving a client. Sometime in that process, you recognize that you're doing these assignments, not for your boss, but to address and help a client. Probably about 5 to 6 years into my career, I started doing some consulting with a very large healthcare client, and the information was very important to them, and they had to report it up the chain in their own management environment. They became very attracted to me and how I engaged them and provided that information and supported them. And it was super rewarding. I loved serving the client and making them happy. You can't really do that when you're just creating drawings, right? You create drawings, and the contractor builds them, and oftentimes there's confusion, or maybe even willful disregard for the work that we put out. Like, I'm just going to do it, you know, whatever I want. It becomes more of a us versus them and really goal-oriented or completion-oriented. And while I've done that and enjoyed it, the satisfaction wasn't quite the same. So I really liked consulting. And then I headed that direction, started my own company, which put me in full responsibility of all those things, but on a very small level, but really focused on finding clients, developing clients, doing work for clients, and then joined a firm that now allowed me as a principal to continue to grow that kind of service to my clients and develop whatever businesses I wanted to. It put me in a position where I was managing people, clients, and projects all at once. So everything's all together. I'm just basically a super entrepreneur. And I, of course, elevated to management positions in that firm, which got me farther and farther away from the projects. And now, right before I left that firm, I kind of achieved as much of that management structure as I would. It was headquartered in a different location. And it just made me think, well, you know, how do I want to end my career? I'm getting close to the end. I'd love to retire, play and all the things I can, maybe, you know, build some more stuff. If I look at the last bit of my career, the last thing I haven't done is run a company of size. The challenges are bigger. The rewards ought to be bigger. The impact ought to be bigger. So all those things are like, well, if I can do that, that would be great. As soon as I started thinking about that, I thought, wow, that's a pipe dream. Never going to happen. And then just out of the blue, got a recruiter that was interested in placing me within this opportunity in the firm. When I got there, they're building a team that understands their business. It was clear that this is a pretty good opportunity and not really a downward side for me, other than the fact that it's, you know, a risk. There's always a risk making a move like that. But the upside is once I got into the group, I found a very well-selected team. So it's kind of like being chosen to be on the all-star team and not knowing it, if you will. But now we're trying to work together and develop the team aspect rather than just a bunch of all-stars. And that's really what's being fun. So, and I knew that was a possibility. Either go be CEO or become part of a high-functioning team. I'm glad I didn't just jump into a CEO position and try to do all that, because I think it would not have been as successful as now. I can learn more and be in a better position that, you know, maybe there's another few years in me that I can do something like that. But right now, this is definitely the right spot for me.
So what things have you found that's been useful in having this all-star cast of people come together on the team? What things or strategies do you recommend when people find themselves in a situation to create and operate as a cohesive team?
You know how to solve tough technical problems, but leading people, that's a different challenge. Stepping into leadership means more than just knowing your stuff. It's about inspiring, communicating, and navigating challenges with confidence. At Engineer Your Success, we help technical pros like you grow into leaders who just don't manage the work, but lead the people who do. If you're ready to lead with clarity and impact, visit engineeryoursuccessnow.com today, because thriving isn't just for others, it's for you.
Yeah, so, you know, the thing that really bubbles without anybody speaking to it is authenticity. Everyone there is devoted to the end goal, which is success for the company. Saying what we think is important and encouraging people to express themselves. We all have experience, you know, we're contributing thoughtfully, intelligently, and just that diversity of experience is pretty well embraced. Now, the group is not very diverse. We're a bunch of engineers, so we're not talking about a true diversity at the leadership level, but we also recognize that that's the way it's working in our generation. And there's lots of focus on trying to elevate leadership and making opportunities for people. Now, if anybody were to find themselves in a similar position, the way I manage and always have managed is very, very much authentic, very much transparent, and as honest as possible. I mean, clearly you can't share everything you know, but at the same time, you don't hold anything back or hide things from people. That's the best I can do. If people don't like it, they're upset about it. Most of the time, I'm trying to make sure that there's very objective reasons for why something is happening and not just my subjectivity coming into play. That's worked out pretty well. I think in general, people understand it. And I'm probably not everybody's best friend, but I'm probably not hated by everyone either. So it's probably a good balance.
No, I think that's great. Just the whole power of authenticity, both as you are functioning within a team and when you are thinking about the people that you lead, making sure that as you're leading your team, that you're presenting authentic leadership and you're being yourself and you're not there to be everybody's friend. are not necessarily going to be buddy-buddy. You can deliver the news or manage your communication in a way which is not abrasive, but you can still deliver it with impact and with force.
Right, right. It's very similar to my life as a parent. I found the great timing opportunities as my kids were growing up. My career was getting more responsibility to manage people and handle tougher situations. A very balanced approach to parenting with the intent that you want that individual to become their own capable, self-directed, self-motivated contributor. It sounds so, you know, clinical, right? If I say that and they're like at a family picnic or something, they're going to go, yeah, here's Kevin again talking the way he does. But that's the context of anything I'm developing in terms of those discussions. It helps me because then I'm not emotionally engaged at the same level. Because when I first started, that was the big challenge I had. There's so much emotion in whatever decision was going on or the importance of the response that I was getting. I don't have full control of how somebody responds to the information. I can be empathetic and worry about my delivery, but at the same time, like once it's out of my mouth, you know, I'm sorry or anything else I can do, you know, it's about all you can say. You know, how I interacted with the kids was very similar too. So,
and what I would add is that once it's out of your mouth, the only thing that you can say may be sorry, but that's not going to have the same weight as what you said. The thing that I think we can do is learn from that experience and look to repackage how we communicate to that individual or to that situation in the future.
Right, right. You know, that's constant. I remember at some time a therapist I had or something would indicated like there's saves. You can actually make a save. You don't have to just sit on it and go, oh, well, I blew that one and not ever say anything more. So just that authenticity and honesty is like, okay, hey, yeah, I could have said that better. Let's talk about it again. So
I find as a parent and an entrepreneur, it is humbling when you go back and say, hey, we had this conversation. I did not respond the right way. And here's what I want it to communicate. And just being honest and authentic and saying, hey, I'm not perfect, but here's what I intended to say.
Yeah, and that's so well received, I think, is what really helps me. Just approaching it a little bit differently. I grew up in an environment where it was like, win at all costs, right? Very aggressive, dominant style of leadership. And I was fine, successful, I guess, right? I contributed in some way to society. I'm not a failure and drove myself to success, but it was not necessarily a comfortable path. Mm-hmm. And it isn't necessarily unique or beneficial and doesn't have a good place in today's society because people are a little bit more thoughtful. And the people that we want to engage with that are going to be self-motivated and thinking about new ways to do things that we're doing really know their value and they don't want to be subservient, which is kind of what you need a whole subservient set of followers to be a leader in that regard. So you're not going to be very successful because you just can't keep people motivated. Fortunately, I had an open enough mind that I could kind of understand that. And then it became fun. Right now it's like, oh, let's learn more about the things I don't really understand because of my background.
But was it something that happened that caused you to make that shift? Because it sounds like you were on the path, win at all costs. This is how the environment that you grew up in, you were attacking success, you were being successful. What was the thing that caused you to take a step back and consider there might be a different way?
Yeah, so there's a couple, like really early on, you can't do that with clients, for sure. You have to go in with a different approach. And that was successful. So then it kind of makes you wonder, well, I'm not going to go try that other thing. So just the way to interact with people that is a little softer, a little bit more giving, a lot more contrite. You definitely don't come in guns blazing, you know, because that's, you know, it's then immediately received as arrogance and conceit, and, you know, and clients only pay once for that. So after that, then when I started interacting with people and managing internally, the responses you get, it's one thing to be a driver and a dominant figure as a leader and people do things, but they're quieter. They don't feel as engaged. I'm not all, you know, happy, fun guy at work and trying to make everybody enjoy it like a party, because I know that that's one, unsustainable, and two, unfair, because then, you know, we really need to buckle down and work hard. Like that's too different from what day to day is. So I just try to make sure that the interactions were as honest and as light as possible. And then people were very responsive in their own way. And so then as I saw each individual kind of attain their own base status, depending on who they are, they function the way that they do. And they seem to be also doing the same thing down the line. And so now you have a very diverse workplace with everybody contributing in the best way that they want to, in a way that is the results that I wanted. So it was like this positive feedback loop. And so that then helped me change, you know, that and advice from others. My wife finally going, you know, okay, I've been saying this really subtly for a long time, but you've been doing great. It's real good, positive feedback. And you talk to anybody who has some psychology background and they'll say, yeah, you don't come in guns blazing and expect everybody to say, what do we do next? Right. So that was, it was all nice to learn that. And, you know, a lot of the things that I've learned over time are influenced by what's going on around us. That's the first thing. You gotta open yourself up, get some empathy, recognize what's going on around you, and just try to bring that into what you're doing day to day.
So getting back to what you're doing now, how many people are on your team that you're leading?
Leadership comes with high expectations, too many responsibilities, too little time, and the constant pressure to keep up. If you're feeling stretched thin, you're not alone. At Engineer Your Success, we help leaders take back control so that they can lead with confidence, delegate effectively, and stop running on empty. You don't have to choose between success and sanity. Let's build a leadership plan that works for you. Visit engineeryoursuccessnow.com today, because thriving isn't just for others, it's for you.
Yeah, our business unit is about 400 people. I have my direct reports, maybe 8 to 10. These are all regional vice presidents and technical leads. So they're their own management levels themselves. The size doesn't change much other than the amount of travel or time I spend on the computer, phone calls or whatever I'm like. So it's far more intense from that standpoint, but the goals are still the same. Even if I'm managing a team of 5 or a team of 10, the diversity is different, right? Now you think, oh, at least I don't have somebody who's like that. I bet I have that person somewhere in the organization. I also have a different perspective because I'm 400 of 1600. You know, I have an equivalent, you know, really great partner who's an executive vice president for what we call forensics. He has, I think it's probably like 950 people that report to him. But we have very similar challenges and concerns and the same vision for what we want to accomplish. And so when we get together and talk, I find it just super empowering that the two of us, more than half of the company is somehow under us, and we're able to get everybody on board and move. And I think the other thing that helps us out quite a bit is the C-suite is so supportive of us. Like, you guys can make it happen. Different environments may not be as good, even though it's probably high pressure and people go, I could never do that. Or you have an investor and it's all evil or what. I understand everything from both sides. And it's nice because that level of understanding and experience is not very common in our world. So I feel kind of blessed that I can have enough information in my head already. I don't have to learn a whole bunch of stuff to actually start making some changes. Hopefully set us in the right direction.
No, I think that's great. The question that I was going to ask you, or what came to mind, is if there was one thing that you could tell the 400 people that you have the pleasure of supporting on your team, and they happen to listen to this podcast or see the YouTube video, what is it? What's the message that you would want to communicate to them?
So there's so many demands on their time, and work's work. Otherwise, we'd all get hired for play and get paid for play, but we get paid for work. So there's things that are really important about your career that you have to keep in context. Is you're going to work to accomplish whatever you need to perform well, to be paid appropriately. That's the mix. In our profession, if you're an engineer, you're born an engineer. You may not have an engineering license or practice engineering, but if you're born engineer, you're figuring out solutions to problems. You're applying all your skills and even getting other skills and information, and then proudly presenting that solution to somebody who wanted it or you think is going to want it. And that's all we're trying to accomplish at its core. How the compensation side of it works is there is a merit to it. You have to do well. The more of it you do, the more value it has, the more dollars that come to it, that compensation piece of it. And then, you know, we have a wide range of people who support us. You go from building your own little Lego project as a kid, all self-contained, all of it. You don't have anybody helping you. And you go to my world where maybe 100 out of the 400 are in what we would call support roles. They're not engineers necessarily. They don't have the control to build the Legos. So you then have to share the wealth a little bit. And that's kind of all that happens from a business standpoint. So when I'm asking for things to happen within the region or within the unit, it is because I know that if we raise the tide, so to speak, it's, hey, let's go find more work, do more work. The reason why is that gets us more opportunity to bring in more revenue. When you bring in more revenue, you can hire more people or give better opportunities for people, or you can compensate people differently. But you have to have that revenue to make those decisions actually manifest in real change or real opportunities and in real compensation. So, you know, why there's drivers and discussions and we don't communicate as well as we can, the underlying purpose is to make our work environment more like play. So if you go down to the Lego thing, you're just that little kid playing with your Legos. After you've done a few projects, you'd love some more Legos. And they don't just fall from the sky, right? You got to go buy more Lego sets. We've been doing this for our entire lives, and we forget that most everything that has a growth component takes more resources. A lot of people get hung up on that, and I understand why. They think, oh, you're just going to try and make money and that kind of stuff, because as business leaders, that's what we're blamed for. The reality is we just want to make sure that everyone who enjoys work or can enjoy work, or they're getting opportunities out of their work, can get as many opportunities as possible and can be rewarded in the right ways. So it's all well-intentioned. Sometimes it doesn't feel that way, but it is well-intentioned.
Okay. I think that's a great message. Let's get to some areas where you have some leadership advice or tips for the aspiring executive. So you have a person, they're working in a civil engineering firm or engineering firm. Maybe they're a manager, but they're ready to take that next step. What are some pieces of advice that you would have for them?
Yeah, so there's a couple of things. First, sometimes you don't control your situation. You can just do the best you could. You didn't get that job or you didn't get the promotion you wanted. It's out of your control. Don't hang up on it. Just move beyond that. No matter how you got to that next step, it's really easy for anyone in a position of power to accept someone who's got a plan that shows that there's a high probability of success. And there's two ways we look at that. Is one, it makes logical sense because it is written in the language you understand, usually some business context, or examples of previous success. Hey, I've been running this team for 8 years and our team has hit all of our metrics and this is the way that we do it. And what I intend to do is to actually, if I get this promotion, right, bring that to this bigger team, but I know it's different. It has these other people. And so I'm going to sit back and watch them. But my intent is to grow my team, which will be additive to this 10%, because I know I can do that and know my team. But those other guys, I'm going to anticipate that maybe it's 5%, just because it would be a little bit arrogant for me to think I'd do more. So this reality of what you can deliver carries some weight. Obviously, confidence. That's all part of that. How do you come up with all that? You have enough confidence because it's been successful in the past, or you're just completely devoted to that effort. Speaking with confidence to that issue carries quite a bit of weight. And proof's in the pudding, so to speak, but you don't consider those next steps until you're successful and starting to get a little complacent because you need to be challenged. And that's what you want to consider is like, okay, how do I succeed at that challenge? Just like you did in the last one. It's always the same, if you will.
So you're successful where you are, and you're tracking that success, being able to see what the outcomes have been of how you've been successfully managing a team or managing a project or delivering in that particular role. And then you're wrapping that in the narrative that is important to the decision maker for that next opportunity, making sure it's wrapped in that language that speaks to what's important at that level and to that person you're talking to.
Yeah. And a great little anecdote, when I was interviewing for this current job, I was talking with the recruiter and he started prepping me in terminology, full business terminology. Like, this guy, easily one of the most impressive recruiters I've ever dealt with. Very much a business person, obviously dealt with the highest level of highest, you know, companies that are out there. And he says, we need to get you ready to speak to how much you've grown your unit and all these things that he thought would be really important to these guys who are going to hire me. And after about 10 minutes, I said, whoa, look, this is a people business. And so all the stuff you're speaking to, I never tracked. I didn't care about it. You know, my previous job, I was just there to support and encourage and motivate, and people would do what they're capable of doing. We didn't have growth mandates and it wasn't really a driver because there wasn't a time commitment, but we made it clear. If you do well, you get paid better. If you need to hire people, just keep them busy. Like, very simple messages. And it works. If I look back at the terms, it's a little less than what you want to do, but I can get that in front of me. I said, in reality is in this interview, when I'm talking to the CEO, I'm really not going to focus on those numbers. So when I got into the interview, the CEO, actually it was the entire C-suite, but the CEO was really asking me a lot of questions. I just said what I thought of, you know, I said what I knew. It was just me speaking. And most of what he focused on was what I thought about what I'm doing. Tell me about your market and where would you grow and who would you buy if you were to purchase another company, or if you wanted to merge with somebody, what would you want to have for that company? So just kind of questions about things that, you know, now as I see my job, how is this person going to fit this role? And how much you're going to grow and buy what or whatever has far less to do with that other than what are your capabilities for dreaming big and pushing, motivating to that end result. Performance is really a result of you doing your job well. Yeah. My current boss reminds me, you figure out blocking and tackling and then the scoreboard will show what it needs to show. That really resonated with me because I've done that for my entire life and have always relished being in the underdog position. If you can outperform what people expect from you, there's no more gratification than I can find. It really establishes that confidence loop. Like, I didn't think I could do it, but I did it. And not only did I do it, I crushed people. And nobody expected me to even show up. So that's a boost that you can keep riding for a long time. That mindset, as you're approaching that next challenge, is like, I'm just going to be honest, true to myself, and do what I can. And then, like I said, some things won't be in your control, but if it's meant to be, it's meant to be.
So Kevin, throughout your career, what would you say has been your biggest challenge?
You've moved beyond the tools. You're leading people, projects, and big decisions. But no one really showed you how to lead in a way that works for your life, your team, and your long-term success. That's where Engineer Your Success comes in. We help technical professionals grow into confident, intentional leaders without burning out or losing themselves in the process. If you're ready to lead with clarity and thrive at work and home, visit engineeryoursuccessnow.com to get started.
I would say probably setting my expectations accurately within the context of what I'm doing. So when you're doing project work, you need to come up with your best solution. And so you'll kill yourself and say, here it is. And you'll take it to another engineer. If you put 20 engineers in a room and you ask them one question, you'll get 25 answers back. And they're all right. They're all 100% right. And you know, how does that work? There's only 20 of us. It doesn't matter what solution you come up with. When you hand it over to somebody in a technical context, it gets hammered. Like, there's, oh, you could do this better or this or whatever. And that's what we spend at least 10 years of our life doing, just trying to impress other engineers, which is insane, honestly, for lack of a better term. And then you turn it over to the client and they don't even know what you're handing. They can't judge it. They don't know if it's good or not. As long as it gets approved by the building official and the contractor can build it, it seems like it's great. So I think really aligning, you know, what it is that you're trying to accomplish and where you need to push, you put in so much effort and then get the crap kicked out of you, you feel horrible about it. Know that you're pushing the cart along. You don't have to push it along perfect and you're not driving. Just like contribute. And then as you get in the position of delivering to the client, that's what I think about a lot. What did they ask for? That was probably the most challenging part for me. The transitions throughout my career were collectively the biggest challenge.
Okay.
But it's how to think about things like, well, that client asked for this and I'm doing all of this other stuff to make myself feel better about it. But I actually knew the answer was right in 5 minutes, but I spent 5 hours instead. So just aligning what we think is really important as engineers to what the client thinks, but still maintaining our role, right? We have a very high level of sophistication in what we do. The public relies on us. We, you know, we carry licenses that have real responsibilities in law. Don't lose any of that, but be efficient. Give the client what they're asking for. Otherwise, we're giving away a whole bunch of really great technical expertise for free, which is a little bit insane. Nobody else does this, right? Everybody else gets paid for their time.
Yeah.
I think that was that, and probably the realization that, you know, while I try to make myself the best technical person in the San Francisco Bay Area as a seismic engineer, next generation, because there was a whole bunch of people before me that changed the world, honestly. And so it's like, okay, well, I want to be like those guys. I know I won't replace them. I know I can't be them, but I want to be the next round. And there's less of a demand for that. Like, that's not necessarily what people want. And it was hard for me to recognize, like, wow, it wasn't a waste, but man, it wasn't where I was going to end up being the most beneficial contributor. It was really about identifying that other generations are doing the same thing I did. Let's facilitate opportunities for them. And as soon as it wasn't about me anymore, it was about other people, it made that high pedestal that I thought it would. It made it far more palatable, in essence, like completely unimportant because of how much control I had over the ability to create opportunities for others and how rewarding that was. And so that shift was, while it turned to be one of my biggest challenges, like, how do I deal with this emotionally and intellectually, is I just went with what was around me with some help from people that support, like, well, that's your job now. That's your calling. And I think the hardest thing is for us to find out where we are in our career and how we can contribute the most. And then, of course, to take a step back and get out of my engineering world, is you do that in life. As you're an engineer and you're young and you're single, you know, you're contributing big in the work world and maybe in your social world, but then you have a family and a young person to worry about or whatever it is. And now when you go to put your energy into something, is it work or is it family? And I, you know, I love the good friend who has an incredible handle on how to balance work and home life. She's overwhelmingly effective in her work life and very, very good and really laudable in her family life. And she has the least tolerance that I know for work-life balance. And her statements are 100% true. You just make decisions as you decide that you're going to spend a bunch of time on work or a bunch of time on family. And you have all of that time every week, every year, whatever it is that you're going to put into this. And just know that I'm deciding to work hard now. And then I'll decide to put time into my kid. And the balance isn't 40 hours a week. That's it. I shut off my phone. It's that, you know, sometimes it swings one way, sometimes it swings another. And her family adapts to that well. And I think back to how I had to manage that early in my career, and I didn't do a very good job. I fortunately have my wife super supportive, and the kids will tell you, like, oh, I don't remember you being gone all that much. I was always gone. I was always like focused on something else, but I was around enough that my contributions in both worked out to be pretty successful. It was not 40 hours a week, and it was not shut off my phone at 7. You know, it was very much respond and respond appropriately and smartly. So those have been super to watch now as I'm getting towards the end of my career. Is that wasn't such a bad way to go, but it definitely was not as strict as people want to have it. And I do understand boundaries, although I don't show them myself. I'm typically accessible 24/7. But no, I do understand that sometimes you just got to break free. What I try to encourage is people need to respect that. Is that, oh, he's on vacation, I'm not going to go bug him. Like, how can I step in for him? What can we do because he's on vacation? Or she's going to take off, you know, rather than a normal maternity time frame, 6 months. Great, go do it. That's what you need to do. We're going to figure out how to make this work. Just that kind of level of support has been a big change in the workforce, and to not embrace it is a huge mistake because people are not as loyal as they were in the 20s and the 30s and the 40s, no. Right? But they will not be loyal at all if you're not accepting the fact that they have lives outside of work. When you do understand that, then they're potentially loyal a little bit, but it's really about, I need you to contribute and I understand I'm going to give a little here. I hope that you could give a little and contribute in the future. And it's been pretty successful so far.
I think that that's great. It sounds like I need to have your friend, and we need to interview her on the podcast as well. I'll follow up with you on that later.
Yep.
So when you think about moving forward into the future, what really excites you?
I think that there's this big challenge in front of us to correctly use technological advances to our advantage as a profession. When we first started doing our work, it was paper and pencil and slide rules and all that stuff, right? So it was very labor intensive, and it needed to be, like, a lot of people working on it and big drawings. Now with a lot of the technology, what used to take a team of 12 in terms of design, let's just pick new design for structures, now it really takes 2, maybe 3 people, like a very small group, and they're maybe working full time on it. Some of the stuff we do is going to be 90% handled by repetition, which AI is going to help us figure out how to do. And it's going to take some investment, but once we do it, all that drudgery work that, you know, I did when I started my career was less than the people that did before me, but that's going to go away. So as it goes away, like, now what? What's our value proposition? That excites me because now we get to be outside of, like, the structural engineering precept. So while I'm super proud about people doubting that I'm a structural engineer, I'm going to be, like, normal. right? That this, I may be abnormal now, but in 10 to 15, 20 years, a structural engineer is not going to be that into buildings or whatever. They're going to know how things should work, but they're almost like adjunct contractors. I think contractors will always have a responsibility to help something be built. And there's a lot of automation that happens in the construction world too over these next 10 to 20 years. But they're going to be a very still labor intense oversight role, no matter how automated things go. So a good design team is going to be an adjunct to that construction team. And then it's like, how do we figure out value? How much energy do we put ahead of the project, into the project, during the project, post-project? How much data do we put into the documents or models so it's useful after the fact? And so now you get to think, you know, all kinds of crazy different ideas instead of WL squared over 8 and just putting your shovel in the ground. I mean, it's far more creative, if you will. So I'm excited about that. I think that there's a big upswing that'll continue where women are not in the minority of structural engineers. And they're already, of course, not in environmental engineering, which is super. We know, like undergrad, I think we're at 40 to 55% women in the civil engineering program. And then when you go to structural, it gets to like 20. It just depends on the specificity. But there's far more women in the environmental world who stay. So you have an almost 50, over 50% women-driven engineering program, you know, usually most in environmentally focused areas. And the reason that that's good is that the way women think about problems is so different than the way that men think about problems, by and large. It's far more empathetic and inclusive rather than here's the answer, go, go, go. It's like, well, here's the answer that I think. I'm going to go ask other people and figure out if this is truly what we want it to be or not. Generally, that's what I've seen, and that's what clients have identified and they appreciate. And it's just going to make the profession so much better and more attractive to a larger group of people because we just don't have enough engineers to do what we need, especially as U.S. citizens. And if you make it far more attractive to come into and stay in the profession, we will have more engineers. We just have to make it more attractive because, you know, honestly, a lot of women leave the profession because like, this is stupid. I have to work this hard to get paid this little and have this little respect out of these people. Like, I can do something better elsewhere. And I can't blame them. The ones that leave, you know, and have something better to do, they can make the right decision for their life and off they go. I miss all of the women that I had hired and that have now left the profession because they were just super for all the things that they did. And hopefully a few of them are watching and they can say, oh, maybe I should get back in. There was a time I think I'd hired probably 30 women engineers in the Bay Area. Over time, I've probably lost like 10 to 15. So about half of them, all for really good reasons. I'm going to go help my dad start his construction business. I need to live closer to my grandmother. Some of those things have changed post-COVID. You don't have to be right where you're working. You can do it remote. I think in general, just the way that the profession will change, that'll be pretty fun.
I think that's great. And Kevin, I just want to thank you for your time. Before we conclude, if folks want to get in contact with you, what will be the best way for them to do that?
They can reach out to me through my LinkedIn, and then you can always get me at my Rimkus email, which is kevin.moore@rimkus.com. You can find all this stuff online. If you were to Google me, you end up with a couple different locations, but that's where I'm at currently. Give me a little bit to respond, but I usually respond to everything I get. I'm not overwhelmed with, you know, lots of input. Maybe this will be popular enough, James. I know you're very popular amongst a wider group of people, so maybe I'll finally be inundated. But yeah, it's just nice to reconnect. And I've been president of CEONC and some other kind of, I'll call it high level administrative roles. So I understand access and people wanting to talk, and I'm more than happy to reach out. I think it's important.
Is there anything else that you would like to share with the listening audience?
Other than appreciation for you, we talked a little bit about your decision to be where you are today. For the listeners don't know you already, I'd love for them to dig around a little bit and find out more about you. A super description of how to follow your heart and deliver on a message that didn't just come to your brain because, you know, you were bored. Like, this is clearly a calling and you responded. And it's such a benefit and a real honor to be part of all of this. I just hope it continues to grow and you will become the dominant source for leadership guidance in our engineering world because we need it. I mean, there's definitely a a dearth of really good management and educational, basically, well, not only the leadership, but the fellowship. Like a lot of us just don't know how to talk to each other. We all struggle because, you know, where we started, we had to know it all ourselves. You take a test, show how expert you are. But we know life is really about your network and your friends and who supports each other. What you've developed here is such a great support to all of us. We really appreciate it.
Okay. All right, Kevin. Thank you. I am going to end this episode like I end every episode, and that's this. Many people know what to do. Fewer people know how to do it. And there's a select group of people that actually follow through and do it. Kevin, I want to thank you for being part of that select few.
Thank you. Appreciate it.